In every dark tunnel, there's a glimmer of hope. In every painful moment, there's a strength to heal.
I don't understand why it was me. I don't know if I'll ever be the same. Is the same what I want anyway?
As I had mentioned at the end of 2023, we have lost the title of Surviving Abuse and rebranded it into Surviving, because I felt like it was painting our show into a corner. There are so many other traumas and survival stories out there that need to be heard. Today's episode is going to be one of the very first that is completely different than what we've done before. And I've spent some time off the record speaking with the gentleman we have on today, and I cannot wait for you all to meet and to hear his story. So Kiwan, please introduce yourself.
Hello, and I really appreciate you having me on Surviving Podcast. Again, my name is Kiwan Amy. I am an Air Force veteran. Actually medically retired due to a motorcycle accident that I suffered from in 2017, May 5th to be exact, what some might call Cinco de Mayo, I call my new life. And I was just on a busy day like that. I actually had to go to work that day for the Air Force, and there was, I was involved in a motorcycle accident where a car pulled out in front, which left me hospitalized for 2 months. But before I get into that, I'll tell you a little bit more about myself and where I am from. Originally from Durham, North Carolina. For some, they know that as Durham. Others know it as the Bull City because of the Durham Bull Stadium. We definitely are proud of our team. We're proud of the heritage that comes out of Durham. And I am glad to say graduated from Southern High School. Like I said, went on to Air Force to become a flight refueling specialist. And later on, to become an instructor. It was awesome. Amazing teacher. But yeah, like I said, I had a motorcycle accident that changed my life forever. But instead of allowing that tragedy to turn me upside down, I turned it into triumph. And here you find me on the podcast.
Even the little conversation we had before we hit record, I was just so inspired, because you hear of people getting caught up in that dark place. And you have spent the time that you've had risking your life daily serving, and then coming across this tragedy that had nothing to do with the risk you were taking daily serving. Did you feel that because you were risking your life on a almost daily basis serving, that outside of the service you were invincible?
It's funny you would ask that question, because I have thought of this. So serving as an in-flight refueling specialist, I flew on KC-130. That plane was initially built in 1917. And I thought personally that if anything were to happen to me, it was going to be because of how old that plane is.
Yeah.
And I'm not joking you. I kid you not. I used to call it my dinosaur. Yeah. That's what I called it, my dinosaur. And to find out initially when I woke up, the hospital. So I had an accident May 5th, medically induced coma on June the 6th. When I woke up and I was just hearing voices, because they were my mom, my friend, they were in my room. I was trying to figure out the heck is going on here. Why is my mom in my room? Like, it was just, at first I was playing possum, because I was like, I don't want to be awake. You know, I still had no clue what was going on. No clue. And then I hear them discussing some motorcycle accident. I'm like, a motorcycle accident? I'm the only one who has one in the family. Hey, And so I try to say, hey, who was involved in a motorcycle accident? Only to realize that my jaw had been broken and is now wired shut. So I can't speak. But not only can I not speak, I can't even see.
So how long did it take you to realize that you couldn't see? Because you said you were playing possum, so I guess you had your eyes closed.
Yes, okay. I still had my eyes closed at that time playing possum. And what happened was, you know, I got ready to peek over there and look at him. And then I couldn't see anything. So I did one of those, you know how you do hard blink, try to reopen your eyes really wide. Yeah, that's what I did. And it didn't work.
Wow.
But this is the moment that I was like, okay, something's not right. And that's when I tried to say something to them. Of course, they couldn't see nor speak because my jaw is broken and wired shut. And at this point, I hadn't even realized yet I couldn't smell. I hadn't realized that part yet because I was breathing just. And when you're breathing okay, it doesn't bother you. The only time you realize that you can't smell is when somebody asks you about it. Or like you hear somebody cooking or something, and you're like, man, I wish I could smell that. Or you go into a like when you're thinking about smelling something. Other than those things that would cause you to want to think or do a smell-minded thing, that's the only way you can think of it because I can breathe just fine. So those were the, I guess you say at that point, three things that I could not do. Of course, now you hear me talk, so my jaw is no longer broken. And it does work. There are moments like when I go to the dentist office that I do understand that it was broken because sometimes they want me to open it really wide and it hurts. And locked jaw before. Yeah, but again, going back to your original question, I thought I might have had more of an issue on that. I don't know, on the motorcycle. I said, no, don't get me wrong. I do know there are terrible drivers in the world. I do know that because I have rode beside them on the highways. But I tried to do everything I could to stay safe. And even on that day, I was doing the same thing. I was not one of those riders. I've never, ever done a wheelie on a motorcycle. Now, I might have went just a little bit over the speed limit. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. For all the police. But I was not one of those people. I was not reckless because I value my life.
Yeah.
And who better to, you know, value your life than you? Because nobody else really cares. You do. I mean, they might care, but they don't care like you do. So I would always post pictures of me with my bike or getting ready to get on it or whatever and put it on social media and people will say, hey, you make sure you're careful out there on that bike. But you always hear those, what I call mom posts.
Right.
And the thing about those posts, I would always respond and say, it's not me to worry about. It's everyone else.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I wake up in the hospital and it was because of someone else.
So do you mind to tell us a little bit about how the accident occurred?
Yes, for those who might know the area of North Carolina, I was leaving from Jordan Lake. Nice lake. I was leaving from there because I like to go to this one dock that I was just to relax. I'm faith-based. Talk to God. Just free my mind. Anytime I wanted to relax, it's a nice area to sit. It's really quiet. So that's where I would go. And then I was like, oh, shoot, I gotta work. So I'm headed home. And I'm not even speeding because I had enough time. I just knew I needed it to grab my stuff. And lo and behold, there's not many intersections along this route. So I could probably pinpoint where he came from, where he could have come from. Because it was an intersection, because the police report told me that there were two cars behind him that saw me come. So they don't know why he did. And yes, it was a male in a Honda Accord. He pulls out from this intersection. I'm doing 55 miles. Now, what people fail to realize about motorcycles is they do not stop.
Yeah.
They have the smallest surface area of a tire, which is supposed to grip the rim. So what am I going to use to stop? And if I lock that front brake, the bike might stop, but I'm not.
I'm going to go flying down.
Yeah, I'm going to go flying off of it. So, yeah, I tell everybody this story. I had three options. I could have went right. It went into the trees. I could have went left and went into oncoming traffic, or do like I did and hit. So I'm pretty sure I froze up and just hit it. But I honestly do not remember the accident. And I thank God that I don't, because that could kill you. Actually, remembering traumas can kill you.
Had he been drinking? Was it purely an accident? Was it carelessness? What do you write it as?
I'll be honest. I don't. And I personally did not want to know. Yeah. It was 2 p.m. So this was broad daylight. 2 p.m. when this accident happened. And you're pulling out in front of somebody. So my thought is you were either on your phone, you just not paying attention at all. I pray you weren't drunk already. It was Cinco de Mayo. So it could have been a thing. It could have been a thing. But I just pray you were not. Any of those does not make me feel. I don't care which one it is. None of them make me feel. And yes, he later on down the road, actually when I was in the hospital, he wanted to come visit. And I was like, I'm sorry, say what? And my mom said, yeah, the guy who hit you, he wants to come visit you. And I was like, do you want me to go to jail? And she was like, what do you mean? I said, if he comes in the room, I'm going to find my way out of the bed. And it's not going to be to shake his hand.
Yeah.
You just changed my life forever. I don't want to talk to you. And that was where I was with it. I'm like, just leave me alone. I am still recovering right now. And it's just one of those things. I was in the hospital. Just now, actually coming to. I didn't want anything to do with it. So that's where I was with it. And I have no idea what influenced him to pull out of something.
So what have you done with the resentment or anger or whatever word you like to put with it toward him and the situation? What have you done with that?
I am faith-based, so I do pray. I go to church. I put a lot of things in my face regard. Secondly, I'm a drummer, so drums leave a lot of stress. You could take a lot out on those things. People wonder why I play the way I do. I'm like a whole different player now. I play so many different paradiddles and just different slams and everything. I'm just going nuts on the drums. And they're like, okay, Q1's lost it. And it's like, no, I haven't lost it. Not yet.
I've got a place to put it right now.
And then lastly, I definitely elated that I wrote my book, because I told the story from my point of view. I heard everybody else's point of view. I heard what everybody else found out about the accident. I know all of their stories, but now I want everybody to understand how I feel about the situation, the things that I was going through. And also, I was vulnerable with it, because the military, they shy you away from the vulnerabilities, being sensitive. It's like a shut up and color moment. Hey, man, let's get back to it. We got this. We got to get to work. Come on, tighten up your boots. We got to go. And I had to, I guess you could say, reset my brain. and get me out of that in order to become vulnerable. It make this book very, how do I say, reader friendly. Because I have not come across a person who's read my book that either one, didn't cry, or two, just like wanted to reach out to me. Yeah. Because of how it was written. But yeah, those are the three things.
You look at statistics of the surviving rate from a motorcycle accident. That statement alone, without even throwing out numbers, is proof that you're here for a reason. And the fact that you have taken something horrific and regained that narrative and turning it into something beautiful is, man, forgive my language, but damn it, that's amazing. We hear those stories of people getting maybe addicted to the painkillers that they're prescribed, or losing their faith, losing their way. And the fact that you held on to it and was like, you know what, I lost a lot of things, but you're not taking this. It is just really cool. What I would love to hit on for a moment, that you used the word vulnerability. Mm-hmm. My platform is all kinds of kinds, and I've had so many people of different sexual orientation, different races reach out to me, and they all have something that hinders them to accept emotion or to have emotion. I got chills when you were talking about being vulnerable and allowing yourself to feel that vulnerability. And so my question to you is, did you ever feel less of a man by showing emotion?
Actually, I feel like more of a man, to be honest. And the reason I say that's in a mature way.
Yeah.
Maturity allows you to reveal certain things.
Yeah.
Maturity allows you to be like, I don't care what people say. This is what I'm going to say. And so with it being a story written by me, but about, I had to be 100%. I could not do it 50%. I couldn't do it 75%. I couldn't do it 90%. I had to be 100% key one. And to be 100% key one, I had to say, I don't care what you think. This is my book, and this is my, if you want to read it, feel free.
Yeah.
If you don't, that's okay. It doesn't bother me. My whole purpose was to get the story out. That was the purpose of my book. It wasn't to become a millionaire. I wasn't looking to become a bestseller. I wasn't trying to be, you know, on Oprah, Steve Harvey. No, it was to get my story out. So I could actually, it's almost like a journal, say, is what it was, like a journal. And I didn't realize how good of a writer I was. Granted, I used to be a great writer back in school. I haven't been in school anymore. I took college courses, but it was like college. It made you feel different about your writing ability. Once I got back into writing, I was just like, wow, dude, you can. The editor, he was like, I don't have to change much, but this is what the way like a book should read. And I was like, okay. Nice. That's all he was doing, was changing it to make it the way a book should. Now, right. I can write a paper, but he wanted it to sound like more of a book.
Right.
He's like, you know what? Let's change it. Let's make it letters, individual letters to the people reading. And I was like, I can't.
With you being a man that was getting into a great career, growing into your career, I'm sure thinking you're going to retire from this career and everything changing, the change is something that you did not predict, right? Do you find that there's two different sets of PTSD? Do you have PTSD from the service and then have to separate the PTSD from the car accident?
Yes, there is PTSD from both. To PTSD from the service came, and that was, I would consider one of my deployments. I almost died. And it was during that plane, but it wasn't even because of my plane. It was because of one of the planes that I was refueling, who caused a fireball behind us. Listen, you want to talk about somebody being scared? All I did was close my eyes, and that was the one F-bomb I called over the radio. I can't make that up. So if there's somewhere out there floating in space, that's me. I know what our original call is supposed to be, but at that moment, there's nothing else to say.
But yeah, fair enough. Fair. And I'm sure it was completely justified.
Yes. You almost killed me. Get away from me. Very first deployment, too. My very first one. You going to take me out on the first one? That's the first PTSD. I tell that story a lot of the times, just what we call war stories in the military. But the PTSD that I have from the motorcycle accident was initially because what I didn't know about the accident, how the heck did it happen? When I was told about it and what they said about it, that's all I could equate in my mind. So he pulled out. Okay. Was he coming from the right or left? He was coming from the right side. Okay. And so now when I go to pull up to a stoplight and we're making a left turn in front of traffic, I used to white knuckle the door handle and I didn't know that. I didn't know I was doing it. When I tell you white knuckle, that squeeze was like, I probably had some mold changing and shifting in my hand. That's how tight I was grabbing that door handle. And then I noticed one day and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like drew back my hand real quick. And I was like, what is that? And I didn't understand I had PTSD at it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's one of them from the motorcycle accident. The other one is just, so with me not having eyesight, my sound and hearing is like really keen. So if there are ever, put it this way, we had, I would say maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I live in a new subdivision. They are looking like crazy. So at that time, they were digging, clearing out the land and digging and all stuff, but they were finding massive boulders in the ground that they had to get out. In order to get these boulders out, they had to blow them up. And my mom didn't tell me that. She got the email, but I didn't know a thing about it until it happened. And when I say, I felt like I was overseas in the Middle East when that explosion happened, because that's how close it was and how the walls shook in my house. I thought there were mortars coming in.
Wow.
And I was on the phone when it happened, talking, and it, and I was like, and I just froze. And it's like my life just flashed. I literally froze. I stopped talking. Next thing I know, my mom is yelling downstairs, "Are you okay?" I say, "What was that?" And she was like, "I'm sorry, Derek. I was blowing up rocks today. I forgot to tell you." I said, "As I'm trying to take a breath, decompress."
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are. So loud noises are really bad when I don't know where they're coming from.
I don't celebrate the 4th of July in the traditional way. I don't shoot off fireworks. The thought of shooting off these loud explosions to celebrate freedom that has given people that has fought for us to have the freedom that's also given them PTSD just does it. It's never really settled well with my family and I. So we've never shut off fireworks. We don't go to the big celebrations with something that we just haven't done. And people question me, not in a negative way, but people ask me about that all the time. They're like, they expect it. It's when you have triggers, as long as there's some kind of trigger warning and everyone knows that July 4th is pretty much a standard trigger warning, but that just doesn't settle well with me. I just don't like it.
Can I, as a military veteran, medically retired, staff, stay safe, tell you and your family, thank you and applaud you right now. Because if anybody just made sense, it was you.
Thanks.
Think about that. We all go over there and hear these explosions that can wake us up at night. We can run into an IED. There's so these explosions remind us of negative moments,
yeah,
of bad moments. But over here, stateside, everybody's like, no, right, no, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It's a triggering moment. Dang, you know what that means? We don't want to know about it. We don't want to hear that.
Absolutely. And thank you for validating that for us, because it's our way of trying to pay it forward to the people that have fought so hard for us to have the freedom to shoot off the damn fireworks. It's never made, I have a lot of military members in my family, and when they share the stories with us, it's something that we don't take lightly. And we would rather take, if we were going to go spend $100 or $500 on fireworks, we would rather take that and donate it to an organization for our veterans. And I, even in my adult life, I just truly stand by that.
Mm-hmm. No, I greatly appreciate it. And I thank you and your family.
Yeah. And man, so we thank you. We hear the unhappy endings of stories where people have served or been in a tragic accident, and it leads to people just wanting to numb the pain, which leads to addiction. And absolutely, I'm sure your faith plays a huge part in the road that you took. I don't know that there's ever an easy road. I will never say addiction is or even getting to addiction is an easy road, or turning your traumas into a victory, but it takes a lot of work, man. And what kept you so strong to do this?
Yeah, man, I can always point to faith, but
yeah,
family. Dude, there wasn't a day in my hospital where somebody didn't come by. I don't care if you were a family member, friend, co-worker. There was never a day where somebody in two whole months now, I was in the hospital from May 5th to July 7th. Somebody stopped by my recovery.
Yeah.
And just said, if somebody couldn't stop by, which they did, but if somebody couldn't stop by, I always would give a phone call. I'm like, geez, I'm tired of answering this phone. And that was what kept me going. Even when I got home, was doing in-home health, sir. People would come and visit. Yeah, I'm in a wheelchair. What's wrong? There ain't nothing wrong with it. Come see me.
Right.
If I accept visitors, I want you to come be one. If I'm opening up the door, you feel free to come in. But if I was like, I'm going to tell you not to, then that's another story. But I did not shoo anybody away. I don't care what I looked like. I was going through recovery. And you knew that. So when you came by, don't worry about what I look like. Talk to the person sitting there.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I heard you mention addiction, I cannot say that I am not addicted to something, but it is not drugs or alcohol. It's those drums sit right here in my room. I am addicted to those things.
Yeah.
And any time that I can play, I do.
So it's become a release for you. It's therapy.
Yes. Music therapy is a real thing for those who do not know. So whether you feed yourself good soulful music, Christian music, rock, heavy metal, death metal, any, whatever you're feeding your soul, whatever that music genre you play, just realize it does play a part in your everyday life because music therapy is real.
Do you think that with the discipline that you had from your background and training played a part in your recovery?
Oh, absolutely. The Air Force, if there was one thing they instilled in us, it was resiliency. We used to have training on that year, like every year, every single year, and I think sometimes twice. And that was really big because you have to be resilient in order to keep going, whether it's the mission, whether it's in life, whether you have just gotten up in force, maybe your child had something going on and you missed it, whatever it is, you have to be resilient in order to keep going forward and keep pushing forward. And so resiliency is what, actually, in my motivational speaking business, is one of the main topics I speak on. That and overcoming adversity are my two main topics. But
Yeah, I love that. And I felt that talking with you. I felt that once you begin your recovery, that it was, and I don't know this, I'm just throwing things out there, but I feel like you're one of the people that's, no, I'm still going to make my bed. I'm still going to make sure my clothes are a certain type of way. Like, I feel even just with what little conversation we had, that discipline really played a huge factor into your recovery. And I think that's amazing. Man, I'm just blown away with you. To start bringing this to an end, I always like to talk about the good things. And off record, we were talking about some voice acting that you've done, your, of course, your book, your motivational speaking. So let's dive a little bit deeper into that to start ending on a good note. I want everyone to know where to find you. I want to hear, and I don't want to give too much away because I want you to tell the story, but you have met your significant other through your voice acting. Please tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'll first tell you a little about where to find me. So on social media, like Facebook, you can find me at Kijuan, Kijuan, Amy, Amey. And then LinkedIn is Kijuan Amy. And Twitter is Amy Motivation or X. And then as far as my business, my motivational speaking business, you can find me at www.amey.com. Now, before that, so you mentioned the voiceover act. And boy, oh boy, did I want that for sure. That I'm like a huge proponent of just doing funny voices, especially. I guess I started to understand that was a part of me when I was younger. I used to always like to mimic things on TV, people that I knew, whatever, even in dancing, I tried to mimic people. So it's all kind of stuff. I was just one of those people that I like to mimic. Now, I also used to do on stage acting as well. So that's another side with the voiceover. It was like when you hear somebody with a pronounced voice or some just attention, you're just like, wait, what was that? Well, that's pretty cool. One of my favorite, I guess you say, animation, probably a lot of people have seen this, I'm sure, is The Lion King. And I was like, when I would hear that, I would love to just do that voice. Oh, yeah, this is me.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of those different voices. James Earl Jones is a legend. Eddie Murphy, gosh, the Nutty Professor series was awesome. How he just played all those different.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness. My girlfriend, she always picks on me because I fall into grandma all the time. I'm always doing the grandma's voice. And it's just one of those things. I don't know why, but that's just like the old person voice that I gravitate towards.
Oh my gosh, I've not watched those movies in so long. I'm going to have to watch them again now. They're so good.
Yes, but and then, of course, my favorite line, Sherman have a release and Sherman. But yeah, those are my movies, man. Gosh, even Coming to America, the first.
Oh yeah.
And Eddie Murphy, gosh, he did that really. The African dialect and accent that he that movie was actually very nice.
Mm.
And my favorite line was when they were in McDowell's, not McDonald's.
Oh yeah,
McDowell's. And Samuel L. Jackson comes in and sticks up the place. And what's his name? Arsenio Hall is playing. What's his name? Simi. He's Simi.
Yeah, the cast in that movie.
He says, freeze your disease, rhinoceros peasant.
I know. But gosh, yeah, I'll have to watch that one too. I forget about these. Yeah. Just classic movies.
And, gosh, that's so awesome.
And Samuel L. Jackson, like, I don't know that he's ever done any wrong in my eyes. Like, I can hear him talk.
I'll be honest. I did not know he had done so many movies.
Yeah.
He was getting interviewed by somebody, and then they just went down the list of movies he was in. That's good. He's done a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and you forget because he just pop, does it go, and he just keep going like nothing's going on.
Yeah.
But great actor as well. And I think he was a great addition to the Marvel series of Avengers. So he's done a great work. But yeah, those are like the things that I did. You mentioned my girl. Her and I actually met, I think it was May 2020. But we officially started dating January 3rd, 2023. So we just came up on a year.
Well, say, happy anniversary.
Yeah. Just came up on a year. I'm doing a great job remembering dates. I don't want to kick my butt. So that's her name is Mikhail. And we were friends for the longest, but we could tell there was something more. And that's how I feel it should be. Like you should be friends, just free floating.
Yeah.
And then make that connection. You're like, okay, we're not going to be able to let each other go.
Yeah.
Just make this thing official. She's also to live here. So we both share that commonality.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Different reason, but yes.
We both share
that commonality. The title of the book is Don't Focus on Why Me, From Motorcycle Accident to And it can be found on Amazon, Kindle, Audible, and Apple. And I have it not only in the actual paperback version, but I have it in the e-version and the audio version. So
that was my next question is, are you reading it to us?
No, actually, the guy who is reading it, though, he did an amazing job. I hand-selected him personally. He had to audition for the job. And I gave them the basis of how I wanted it rated, and he did what I wanted. So now that I mentioned that, let me tell you this.
Please.
So during the auditions, there was this one guy, when he was reading it, I felt like I was about to start watching a Star Wars movie. I'm like, no, next.
You know what I'm looking for? Love your talent.
Everybody to sleep with this.
Not for that. Wow.
Like, oh, he did a great job. I think his first name is Jerome. He did a great job.
Man, I'm such a fan already. I can't wait to follow you and watch what you do. Thank you again. I appreciate you. I appreciate the service you've done and the service that you're doing now.
I want to extend my deepest gratitude to our incredible guests.
I want to extend my deepest gratitude to our incredible guests. Join us next week as we dive into the healing process. Join us next week as we dive into the healing process and share
more incredible stories of triumph and resilience.